You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We got all our videos up on YouTube from tonight's post-game interviews featuring Monte Morris, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Michael Malone, Kawhi Leonard. Lots of good stuff on there. So if you want to check out what they had to say after the game, be sure to make that part of your post-game routine. We also post those up on DenverStiffs.com, where we have great coverage. Lots of good stuff going on at Denver Stiffs. Been a great couple weeks. It's always great when the Nuggets are winning, and they are winning. Last night, another big win for the Denver Nuggets over the Toronto Raptors, the number one team in the NBA, the Toronto Raptors. Denver gets the win 95-86. They held another opponent below 100 points and get the win once again. This is now six straight wins for the Denver Nuggets at Pepsi Center. Six straight home wins. And in all six games, they've held opponents under 100. You think, oh, you have an advantage at home because of how you shoot the ball, you're more comfortable, whatever. And those things are true, generally speaking. But Denver's winning these games without necessarily lighting the nets on fire. They're winning them with defense, which is a thing that they have become accustomed to this year. They're now the fifth best defense in the NBA, according to defensive rating, which is points allowed per 100 possessions. It's the best way to sort of measure how good a team is on defense. And so they're fifth best there. And you thought, okay, Paul Millsap's out of the lineup. He is going to, you know, he is the defensive backbone, which is true. He is the reason I think Denver is a great defense. But Denver has been able, at least through three games now at home, has been able to maintain that defensive presence without him. And I think that is a testament. First of all, it's a testament to Paul Millsap, because I really do think he instilled a culture of defense and sort of an attitude of defense and showed everybody just how important and how you can win games. I think everybody has bought into the defensive end of the floor this year, in large part because they've realized that offensively you might not have it every night, but defensively you can. That's like the one thing you control, is you can be good defensively. And now Denver knows, okay, now we don't have to be 100% on offense to win. We can win sometimes when we're 70-80%. I thought tonight was one of those nights where they were good on offense but not great, but they were very good on defense. And when you combine those two, this is what you get. So this episode of the show, I'm going to share my notes. If you're new to how I handle post-game shows, meaning podcast episodes following a game, I don't tell you what happened in the game. I think that's boring. You can get that elsewhere. You can even get that on DenverStiffs.com in our recap. You can join the conversation. And in fact, I encourage you, if you've never hopped in our comment section, now it's growing now that the Nuggets are winning and there's just more people hopping on the bandwagon, keep the conversation going. That's what we do here at Denver Stiffs. That's what I do with this show. You like to relive the game. You like to talk to other people about a game. That, honestly, that's some of the most fun times, is just the conversation about sports. So sign up for an account if you haven't already. Join the comment section. You'll meet lots of great people. People that talk daily on the site just to chit-chat about Denver Nuggets stuff. But let's get right into the notes. I like the Jokic-Plumlee pairing. I've talked about this enough. They've started it again. I suspect, especially with how poorly Trey Lyles has played, I don't know that Denver will mix things up. Mason Plumlee has sort of become a facsimile of Paul Millsap. And part of the reason I think Denver's defense has been able to maintain its pace in Millsap's absence so far is because Mason Plumlee does such a good job of that. He talked today after the game about how he has to change his role when he's playing alongside Jokic. One of the ways he changes his role is he becomes an elite help side defender, and Denver, it allows Jokic, it frees Jokic up to maybe not give as much on the defensive end, although I think he's been, even his worst efforts on defense this year have been better than his like average efforts on defense last year. He's still in fourth quarters, I think his effort goes up a lot, which is sort of what superstars do. They pick their moments for when they're great on the defensive end. But Mason Plumlee alongside him has just grown into a very, very nice fit. And whatever narratives there were, I hope those are long gone about Plumlee being bad next to Jokic. Those two are actually very good together. Torrey Craig is shooting with confidence. He's making them. But the confidence is the most important thing here. I think, you know, we talk about gravity a lot, or I do at least. I talk, it's like my favorite concept. Gravity is not just, oh, if you're a good three-point shooter, you have this gravity. There's a lot of things that play into it. And one of the variables, one of maybe 20 variables for gravity, is a confidence a player has in shooting the ball. You catch the ball, you square up, you take a breath, you shrug your shoulders, then you take it. Not very confident. You have a quick release, and you it's funny because I thought Torrey Craig in this game had a quick release on all of his shots, especially early on. And because of that, it kind of sticks in a defender's mind of, okay, I got to close out on this guy because he has that quick shot. It just ups the sense of urgency when a guy is not afraid to take the shot. Well, tonight he had great confidence. He was willing to take shots, had that quick release, and he just did a great job. Here's a surprising stat. Craig is the fourth leading scorer for the Denver Nuggets over the last three games. The fourth, which is, you know, ahead of Juancho Hernan Gomez, ahead of Trey Lyles. He's averaging 11 points per game over the last three. And he's just been, I think they've been his best three games, maybe you could say, as a Denver Nugget, over this last three-game stretch. And right when Denver needed them the most, he has stepped into that role, played with confidence. His defense has been elite. I've talked a lot on the show about how I think his defense is overrated. He's a hustle guy. He does a lot of this stuff, but I thought his actual effectiveness on defense maybe gets overstated. Well, over the last three games, that has not been the case. His defense has been as advertised, and he's had a couple of really tough matchups. Of course, he had Mike Conley. He had Russell Westbrook. And tonight, Kawhi Leonard, who he did a very good job on, even though Kawhi went off for quite a bit and was the best player on the court for most of the night. I thought Torrey Craig did a very good job of making his life difficult. He also is taking a team high. This is crazy. The team high 5.1 three-point field goal attempts over this stretch. And part of that is, again, because he's the worst option offensively, so teams sort of concede to that he'll take shots. But when he starts making them at the rate, I think he's shooting like 50% over the stretch. When he starts making them at that clip, Denver's going to win a lot of games. That's Denver's Achilles heel in a lot of ways, is can he punish the defense by spacing the floor? And through three games, he's done an A-plus job of that. I bet it takes more than three for defenses to start respecting him behind, so he might still get some more open shots, but if he shoots them with confidence and makes them like he has, then that's a win for Denver. One of the themes, we'll take a break after this one, but one of the themes from this game, I thought, was that Denver could not catch a break with the way the ball was bouncing. It was not bouncing their way tonight. This was an impressive win, not because of who it was, because Toronto was shorthanded just like Denver was. It's not an excuse for Toronto. Denver was as banged up and as shorthanded as Toronto was, so that was an even playing field type thing. But what made this such an impressive win, there were so many 50-50 balls tonight that just bounced in Toronto's direction. Denver gets a deflection on a ball, dives for it, doesn't get it, and it falls right into the hands of somebody wide open under the basket, and they get the bucket there. Box out, everybody's boxed out great, but the rebound bounces weird and ends up in the lap of a Toronto player. There's just so many plays where I thought Denver did the right thing, and this got really unlucky with the breaks, and it felt like it was one of those. This wasn't just the first quarter, by the way. This was even in the fourth quarter there was moments like this, and that's why I thought this was one of those ones you chalk up to, oh, this just isn't their night. And that's why it's so impressive that Denver won it. Great teams win when it's not their night, and that's what Denver did tonight against a very, very good Toronto team. Denver's defensive intensity was great in this game, I thought, throughout the entire game. They just brought it defensively. And again, a lot of this is just effort stuff and buy-in. And Denver, I think we're past the point where this is even a note anymore. They just bring it. This is who they are. Funny moment in that first quarter. Refs missed a very clear and obvious travel on Toronto. Nuggets get the steal, though. So I can't remember who it was. DeLon Wright maybe jumps in the air and lands, passes the ball because he panics. So it was a travel, but Denver intercepted the ball, goes the other way. Beasley hits the three, and immediately after hitting the three, he looks at the ref and goes, "How did you miss that?" And you think, Beasley, it worked out. You got a three. It's actually for the better. Why are you complaining to a ref when it would not have worked out in your favor? So kind of funny there. The Nuggets went to Trey Lyles at the center position, something I've been calling for on this show for a while. But it did not work. So much to my surprise, I was very curious. This was a night for it to work because of how shorthanded Toronto was in their front court. So I thought, okay, this might be nice. This might be something to see. But no, I think it was a 12-0 run or 10-0 run by Toronto immediately. Malone calls the timeout. I credit him for trying something like that. Those are very anti-Malone lineups, I think. I think he prefers playing more big, more defensive-minded. He gave it a shot. It didn't work. And then he put Mason Plumlee out there to run alongside Trey Lyles, and Denver immediately regains the ground that they lost. So they give up. This was a game of runs all the way till the fourth quarter. Denver made the last big run. But, you know, Denver goes down big, then they catch back up. And so that was really big for Denver. It's funny, Rocky had his annual nutcracker routine. I put a note in there because it happens only once a year. What happened to our dancing dreidels? We've had, for the last like four seasons during Hanukkah, Denver has had the breakdancing dreidels, which is one of my favorite traditions. It's one of the most bizarre things ever, but we have not had that this year, and I'm very disappointed. I need answers. Jokic, one of the skills I have a note in here, one of the things he's really good at defensively, playing in between the guy driving to the hoop and the drop-off guy. So if you imagine Denver perimeter players get beat or there's a pick and roll or whatever and somebody turns the corner and they're attacking, the big who is in help side, usually playing somebody in the dunker spot guarding that drop-off pass, well, there's a game of cat and mouse that happens between that big and the ball handler, which is, you know, you want to commit. You don't want to fully commit to the ball because then they'll just drop it off for the easy dunk. You don't want to not commit because then they'll drive through the lane and get the easy layup or floater or whatever. But if you can sort of make them not make it very difficult for the ball handler to know when or if you are going to commit, and what you'll do by that a lot of times is, you know, you'll show kind of in between, like fake like you're going, fake like you're coming back, fake like you're going. You just kind of play in between. It's almost a game of chicken, and it's like who can make the proper read. Well, Jokic is very, very good at this skill, and it happens a lot in games. This is something that this is a situation that a big will run in probably four or five times, if not more, per game. Well, Jokic is very, very good at this. He got a steal early in this game because of that, and he just seems to get – he's very good at getting steals in general, but a lot of them come off of these types of plays. And we're just – I have a note in here. I don't even know what – oh, I know what it was for. I have a note in here that says we're just so lucky to have Jokic and to get to watch this guy night in and night out. I thought – 2 years ago, I put this on Stiffs the other day. 2 years ago, I thought Jokic had highlights. Like every night, you just felt like you were tuning into something special. 2016-17 season. Every night, there was something different. Last year, I thought Jokic was very good. In a lot of ways, he was better. I think in most ways, he was better. But the highlights weren't quite there. It was almost less fun. Well, this year, Jokic is even better again. He's made another leap, especially defensively. But even offensively, I just think he is he's more assertive and more confident in taking the reins. But you get highlights every single night. This game specifically had like three or four great highlights that probably could have made it onto that bracket we just did for Jokic Week. If we would have expanded it to a round of 64, there was probably two, maybe three plays from tonight's game that would have fit in there. The one that made me make a note here, that reverse layup he had on Serge Ibaka, who, by the way, is a great defender. He spins and he kind of goes up, and it's a move that like Gary Harris is very good at and guards are good at. Jokic has no hang time, so I have no idea how he made this move with only jumping 3 inches off the ground, but he jumps from the left side, kind of does a little loop-de-loop with the ball in his hands and goes to the other side for the reverse, calls for the and one. And it's just like one of those plays where you're like, man, this guy is so skilled. He is like almost like Kyrie Irving or something in a 7-foot slow dude's body. It just, he has so much touch, so many great instincts. He's just such a crafty player, and that was one of those plays. They fought all the way back in the second quarter. I mentioned they got down, fought all the way back, then gave it all the way back up. So it was a huge game of runs. Even in that second quarter, there were three different runs, two by Toronto, one by Denver. The spacing from Denver on post-ups is something I've talked about a lot. Denver has a tendency to throw the ball into the post and get a little bit stagnant on the weak side. And I think I don't think this is like a coaching thing. I think it's just like a fatigue and also a timing thing. There's one play in particular I'm thinking about. Throw it into Yoke. There's four guys on the weak side. So Jokic has the ball on the strong side. It's just him. There's everybody else is cleared out, which Toronto, if they were, you know, teams are actually starting to not double the post because I think they're so afraid of Jokic. But Toronto did a good job of sort of playing in between, committing and not. Jokic throws the ball in the corner, but Jamal Murray and Juancho Hernangómez are both standing in the corner. So this is just an example of, I think, a little bit more clarity about what they're supposed to do on the weak side when Jokic has an ISO post-up like that. Probably a little bit. That's just something that they can clean up as the season goes on. It's going to really help Jokic in particular with his post-up efficiency, but also just going to help the Nuggets' offensive efficiency overall. So the second half starts out. We'll fast forward to the second half. Nuggets down 9. Very first play of the second half. Always interesting when you're trailing, because especially when you're trailing by 9 points, the game could go either way. Denver makes a run, they're right back in it. Toronto makes a run, the game's maybe out of reach. Well, CJ Miles hits a well-contested 3-pointer right out of the bat, and you think, oh God, Denver's down 12. At this point, I sort of thought, this probably isn't Denver's night. The ball was bouncing weird for them. They're down big. Kawhi's out there. I just don't know if they could come back. Torrey Craig, of all people, hits 2 huge 3-pointers. Both of them out of busted possession. So it wasn't like great process. It was bad process. He catches grenades and he puts the ball up and bails them out in both possessions. Those were crucial. The game was right at that line where, okay, this might start to get ugly. 12 points, could get up to 15, could get up to 13, 14, whatever. He hits those and all of a sudden it's within striking distance again. And this is where Jokic took over. This third quarter, we were debating in the group chat today among Stiffs who gets the game ball, and we're going to talk about Murray here in a minute. He was just so fantastic in that fourth quarter. But as good as he was in the fourth quarter, Jokic was even better in this third. And I know the fourth quarter probably matters a little bit more because that's winning time, but Jokic was just so in his bag in that third quarter, starting with the one-handed reverse, or not even a reverse, he just never turned around. He posted up, backed Ibaka down, and then just shot the ball backwards over his head. Nothing, like, just beautiful off the backboard, like looked like it was he had practiced it a million times. After the game, he said he actually does practice that shot when he's playing. And the dude just, those are the type of plays that, again, we don't see this from anybody else in the NBA. Jokic does this every night. Just something where you're like, man, I've never seen that before, but what a weird thing. He hits that one. He follows it up with a Euro step. Jokic, the slowest player in the NBA, and he still gets guys like completely burned on dribble drives. Not just post-ups or whatever. On dribble drives, he Euro steps his way to the lane, gets a wide-open layup. He just had it going, man. He was in his bag, playing with so much confidence. I thought Denver as a whole, this is what was cool, is after Denver weathered that initial storm, in the third quarter, they started to play really, really confidently, almost like they expected to win this game, which is funny because I was watching it thinking like, oh, this is ugly. They're going to have to really reach. But Denver just got this pep in their step in that third quarter, and it all started with Jokic, who I thought Jokic played with a ton of confidence. Ibaka's a great defender. Kawhi, obviously, a great defender. He just see both guys, he attacked them both so like eagerly, like, oh, these guys can't guard me, and it was really cool to see. Juancho has really struggled with his shot over this last like 5-6 games, which I find very interesting. He has been one of the best 3-point shooters in all the NBA, but he's shooting like 10% or 20% or something like that over the last 4 or 5. So he's in a bit of a slump. Tonight was no different. He got great looks all night long, could not get the ball to go down. Interestingly enough, he went to the practice court after the game and got shots up. He played a lot of minutes tonight, 28 minutes to be exact, 28 and a half, but he still went up and got shots up after the game. I think he's a guy that, if the Nuggets need him to start making shots, Torrey Craig knocking him down is great, but they're going to need a little bit more out of Juancho. You rank the crowd's reaction to players when a 3-point shot goes up. Number one, and this is ridiculous, it almost pains me, but I guess it's kind of funny, whatever. Nick Young, Swaggy P, he's number one. When Nick Young gets an open shot on the perimeter, the crowd, all of Pepsi Center, like, does the what? Like, they just get so excited. So he's number one. There's no question about it. Number two, probably Jokic. I mean, this Nuggets crowd has really embraced Jokic. They just, everything he does, the crowd is like hanging on the edge of their seat for. I think Gary Harris maybe number three. You know that feeling when Gary gets the ball kicked out to him, you're just like, oh yeah, that's it. You kind of get excited. The crowd does well. I think Juancho might be number four. He's a guy that the crowd, first of all, they like Juancho. He's just this like lovable kid brother type, I think. So when he gets an open three, I think everybody's rooting for it. And then Jamal Murray, I mean, these guys all, you could probably mix. Swaggy P clearly number one. The other guys all right there, but the crowd just gets so into it when one of those guys is wide open.
Thank you.
That third quarter, the Pepsi Center crowd, actually really the whole game, but especially in that third quarter, you could feel Pepsi Center was just dying to erupt. This was a great crowd. I think had this game been a little bit more, had the Nuggets got it rolling a little bit earlier, I think this would have been the best crowd of the year for Pepsi Center. I mean, they were ready. They were dying and eager for something to happen, but it just, Denver would make a little run, then Toronto would make a run. Denver just could never sustain it. They could never get like 5 minutes where they were just throwing haymakers. And so you could feel this like nervous energy in the crowd where they were ready to bring it. They were just dying to blow the roof off. Enter the fourth quarter and enter Jamal Murray. And this was such a cool game. Such a cool game for Jamal Murray. He gets out there. Very first play of the fourth quarter, he hits a floater from the baseline. First of all, the baseline is a tough play. You don't see a lot of floaters, you know, not from the side of the court, but he hit this one right to open the game, shot it with confidence, and gets it, and the crowd's excited. Then he hits a corner three that put the Nuggets up. So they had been climbing, trying to catch up, but couldn't get there. Well, they finally get over just to start the fourth. That crowd did not shut up the rest of the night. They were loud and into it and just losing their minds the rest of it. And honestly, this stuff matters. Denver is very good at home, and a lot of that has to do with the altitude. Let's not kid ourselves. That's a huge advantage, and I think a cool advantage for Denver. We love our city. We love being mile high. But it's also the crowd, man. This crowd is a good crowd. Denver has good sports fans. Look, they're fair weather. We get it. They show up when the Nuggets are good and not when they're not. Well, the Nuggets are good now, and this team has bought in, and they get loud. They get into it, man. They're not just a regular crowd. This crowd tonight was very, very, very good. When everyone is healthy, I would consider starting Murray at shooting guard every fourth quarter. Tonight, that's what happened. Monte Morris at point guard, basically, to open the fourth, Jamal Murray. I think as a second line, you know, you're going to close with your starters, and that means Jamal's going to be your starting point guard, as he should be. He should start games that way. But for fourth quarters, Jamal Murray getting going as a scoring threat is so big, and I think Monte taking the burden off of him to be a playmaker really helps out in that regard. Murray also hit a turnaround jumper in this one and then a three-pointer immediately after that. He was so good in that fourth quarter. I think 14 fourth quarter points, and they were all of the very loud variety. There were no quiet Jamal Murray buckets in this play. They were all like clutch, big-time shots, self-created or mostly self-created. He was just so good. And here's the thing. I don't know that Jamal Murray has been great this year. In fact, I would say I think he's been a little bit, you know, I'd say a little bit disappointing. Not a whole lot. Like, if I were to give him a grade, it would probably be a C on the season relative to what I expected of him. His shot has not been there. That's the biggest thing. So when he has quarters like this, there's a lot of players that can get to a certain level and sustain it and they're low mistake or whatever, but not everybody can do what Jamal Murray did in the fourth quarter, which is knock down these big shots, create off the dribble, knock down off the set shot, just make tough fourth quarter buckets and have them in bunches. And when he does, this Nuggets team is unbeatable. They're that good. This is part of what I think the Jamal Murray experience is. We have to remember he's 21 years old. And you want him to be a little bit older. You know, you wish that he was maybe 23, 24, more in line with like Gary and Jokic. But when he is as good as he can be, this Nuggets team just goes to a whole other level. And that's what's so exciting, I think, about him as a prospect is, I know I've seen a lot of the trades. Oh, Kemba Walker, Denver should go out and get them. And look, Kemba Walker does the stuff Jamal Murray did tonight. He does it all the time. So, you know, I see why people think that. But Jamal Murray just has this level he can get to that on nights like tonight, you just you start to daydream. Danny Green got poked in the eye, and that was low-key a crucial moment in this game. Toronto didn't have any creator. Being without Siakam and Kyle Lowry, you know, Toronto was probably 50% what they're capable of. And there was a lot of plays tonight where Danny Green was asked to be a pick-and-roll ball handler or whatever, and he's just not good at that. But what he is good at is catch and shoot, playing defense. Well, he gets poked in the eye, and I don't know what the Nuggets outscored them from that moment on, but it was probably by a lot. So that was a big play. As shorthanded as they were, they needed all of their guys that were available to them. And Danny Green going down like that, he stuck in the game, but clearly was bothered by it. I think that was pretty big. Now, I thought Denver had this game in the bag from basically 1 minute into the fourth quarter because of those Jamal Murray shots. The crowd was just so into it. It just felt like all momentum was on Denver's side. Here we go. The only time I questioned it was when Jamal Murray gave a behind-the-back pass with 4 minutes and 30 seconds left, a behind-the-back pass in transition that was just not – it was a horrible pass, an F-minus pass. And the sad thing is, sitting on press row, we all kind of knew he was going to do this. It was like, oh, God, Jamal's about to do something dumb. Because it was one of those things where he had just hit like four shots in a row. The crowd is just going nuts. Denver gets a steal. They're going on the break, but it's like a two-on-two fast break. There was no advantage, no good angles. And you just kind of get to tell like, oh, man, he's feeling it a little bit too much, I can tell. And sure enough, he turns it over. Denver's up nine. He turns it over, and they get a bucket out of it. Denver comes down. I can't remember what they do. Quick possession. Toronto goes the other way and gets fouled, knocks down two free throws. So in the span, Denver from 4:30 to 4 minutes goes from up nine with the ball in transition with a chance to either go up 11 in transition or pull the ball out, waste 20 seconds, and then, you know, still be up nine with 4 minutes to go. Instead, they're only up 4 points with 4 minutes to go. So in that 30 seconds had an enormous swing to it, a 6-point swing basically. And, you know, when you're only up, what did I say, 5 points at that point? Yeah, you're only up 5 points with 4 minutes to go. That's anybody's game. They're right back in it. I mean, Denver's still in an advantage, probably like 65-70% chance of winning at that point. But had he just pulled the ball out, not even gotten a shot off, just pulled the ball out, get a shot up at the end of the shot clock and then get back on defense, Denver's win probability probably like 85%. So that was a big, maybe 90%. That was a big turning point in the game and one that could have really cost Denver. Had Denver not just been so clutch and just so found ways to win like they had all season long, and they were able to close this out. What I loved about it, Jamal Murray had a bucket going to the basket off of a Jokic cut. Jokic had two big buckets, one a floater, the other an offensive rebound and putback in the fourth. So you get Jamal Murray with a clutch fourth quarter from start to finish. You get a little two-man game from Jokic and Murray, which we've talked about. That needs to be sort of the basis for Denver in fourth quarters. Certainly while everybody else is out, Millsap Harris and Will Barton. But the other thing is, and then you need Jokic to be clutch. All three of those things happened. Denver defended. They got stops when they needed. They were great defensively. I think they held, let me see here. I think they held them to 14. Yeah, 14 points. They outscored them 27-14 in the fourth quarter. That's a team that features Kawhi Leonard, one of the better one-on-one scorers in the NBA. Denver just handled business in this one. I think you have to be encouraged. If you're a Denver Nuggets fan, you can let yourself daydream. It's funny. After the OKC game, I think the OKC game was still better because OKC was at full strength. They'd been on a run, all that stuff. But this one just also very, very, very gutsy, gritty, tough, phenomenal win for Denver. And after that Oklahoma City game, I'm sitting there with Brendan. We've done this, Brendan Vogt, my colleague at Denver Stiffs. We've done this two or three times now this year where we both walk out to our car after we're getting done. We always stay to upload videos and do a bunch of stuff around Pepsi Center at the end. Well, we're walking out and we're talking and we said, all right, let's just give our hottest hot takes about the Denver Nuggets. And I'm not going to share what those hot takes were. But, you know, it's fun after a nice win or after a good streak that you have going just to kind of sit back and say, okay, we always try to be pragmatic and we take things game at a time or whatever. But let's step back and let's try to just share where we think this team is, what they're capable of becoming and all this and that. And what I will tell you is that we both came away thinking there is a better than 0% chance that this team is way better than people realize. And winning against great teams at home, even when you're as shorthanded as Denver is and doing it consistently, just think of what they can do when they're fully healthy. I think the sky is the limit. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. I'll be back again tomorrow and all week with brand new episodes. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.